It's the KPI Cafe, a place where conversations happen that aspires to elevate retail automotive and the great folks who work in it. I'm your host, Dane Seville, co-founder of and brand manager for Reunion Marketing, a full-service digital marketing agency that affords me this opportunity to connect with so many great folks. Speaking of great, I do have a great offer I'd like to share with you. If you haven't yet made the switch to GA4, I can connect you with our team to do it for free. No obligation, no fees, nothing. Just an earnest desire to help dealers start collecting their historical data today. So, with that said, we're back after a break that included a trip with my wife to New York City, as well as to the Outer Banks. I'll tell you what, New York City, we took over 70,000 steps. Our goal was to just walk and eat, walk and eat, walk and eat. And I'll tell you what, mission accomplished. In fact, unfortunately, United actually had to cancel our original flight, which we had a direct flight. Now we had to have a layover in Chicago. So with that layover included, we left the house at 6 a.m., didn't get to our hotel till 4:30 p.m., but I'll tell you, we got checked in and we went right out that door. And we stayed in the Lower East Side at a place called The Untitled in Freeman Alley. Great place. Highly recommend that. Really, I mean, the rooms are small. You're in Lower East Side Manhattan. But the place is just really cool. Really good spot. There was a restaurant right down the alley, right down Freeman's alleyway, that was really good food, really good drinks. And but anyway, so, you know, we checked the room at 4:30, got right out the door, walked to Little Italy just a few blocks away, stopped this place called Lanella, had carbonara, which was the best we've ever had, and a cocktail there. And then we walked around Little Italy a little bit, and we stopped in a place called Buonanotte, and we had spaghetti and meatballs and wine. And then we walked around Little Italy some more, which, you know, blends right into Chinatown, walked around Chinatown a little bit, and went to Joe's Shanghai, where we split General Tso's dumplings and some sake. So already within the first about 2 hours of having been checked in, we already ate at three places. I mean, then we did, you know, the dollar pizzas. We did gyros and hot dogs. You know, you gotta eat the street vendor food. You got to. You're in New York City. That's the thing to do. We went and saw, went to a soup place that was, inspiration for Seinfeld. Ate at a 2-star Michelin restaurant, which was really cool. They had people that shadow you like ninjas when you leave your seat. And when you're coming back, they're right behind you. You don't even know they're there. And they pull your chair out and tuck it back in for you. But just lots of, like I said, over 70,000 steps. Just a great time. Then Outer Banks, of course, the exact opposite. I think I took 70 steps, right? It was all about just relaxation and the beach. But enough about me. I hope you're having a great summer. I hope you had a great 4th of July. If you did anything so far this summer really cool that you want to share, please reach out, share your story with me at Dane, D-A-N-E, at reunionmarketing.com. I love to learn about new places and new things to do. Just like I was talking to George Nenny of Generations Digital the other day, and he was telling me about, I think it's called Torch Lake in Michigan, where it's like the waters are crystal blue. It's like you're in the Caribbean or something. So, you know, if you have a cool story, have a cool place to go, please share that with me. Again, Dane, D-A-N-E at reunionmarketing.com. Well, let's go ahead and, you know, I'm just excited to be back, right? I'm just kind of meandering through my thoughts right now. But, you know, I want to hit on a topic that has been really sort of top of mind lately. And, you know, as we talk about Google and Facebook's automations and machine learning, and especially Google's artificial intelligence and, you know, latent semantics and, you know, all sorts of a variety of things. You know, artificial intelligence, AI, is a really hot topic right now. And the thing is, too, is that a lot of people misappropriate that term, right? A lot of people say AI. It's easy to just kind of claim it. But I'm going to have a great conversation today with Colby Joyner of Connected.ai. And I want to dive into it because I'm still a novice. I'm reading a book called The AI Marketing Canvas. And it kind of walks you through like what you need to do to really be able to leverage AI in your marketing efforts. So I thought that would be, you know, as I just start diving into the book, I thought that'd be a great topic. To help you kind of learn more as well, right? You know, I don't know if you're an expert on AI. I certainly am not. But then also, you know, ways to discern, you know, if that company really is employing AI, right? And AI tactics and what it can, you know, what these platforms can do for dealers. So I hope you'll enjoy the conversation as much as I enjoyed my break and trips to NYC and OBX. And I hope you get some value out of this. So this is another two-parter, right? Well, this is another two-parter. I meant to keep the conversation to about 20 minutes. We went 40. That's to me, that's evidence of always a good, insightful conversation because, you know, drove lots of different questions and stuff that I had. So without further ado, let's dive right into it. We're back with another case of what's going on in auto. And I've got a guy who has his thumb on the pulse always on automotive digital marketing, George Nenni of Generations Digital. George, thanks for joining us for the segment today.
Glad to be here. How are you, Dane?
I'm doing well. I'm doing well. Thank you. So let's get right to it. George, what's going on in auto?
What's going on in auto is for our world is all analytics and tracking. And we have been spending the last 2 months helping dealerships get their Google Analytics 4 tracking code in place on their site, which is, it sounds hard, but it's actually very easy. And so even though you've got a year still to use the old Google Analytics before it gets discontinued on July 1st of 2023, if you get the nets out in the water, if you start collecting data now, you'll be very, very thankful a year from now when you've got a year's worth of history to be able to look at.
Excellent. And what is that? You know, we're saying, you know, you should do it now, but what is the absolute deadline to be able to make this switch?
I mean, I guess the deadline would be the end of June, but that would be, I think that'd be reckless. You wouldn't be able to really get things set up properly. There's a fair amount of change. I mean, the new Google Analytics 4 is different enough that I think, you know, if you don't get started in the next few months, you'll just be catching up probably to your competitor who's already getting started. You know, all the third parties, all your vendors, all the chat providers, digital retail providers, they will all have to have new events fired. So they're going to be again having conversations in the next few months around all those steps. But pay attention to those, and you know, the work sounds hard. It's not. Just get your agency and your website provider together, get the tracking code in place, and make sure you get your paid search connected as well. So if you're using paid search through a union or someone else, you want to make sure that they connect the Google Analytics 4 to the Google Ads words and get that done right away. Then all that goodness flows through and you'll have much richer reporting.
Awesome. Yeah, you know, that's why I wanted to underscore just the importance of getting it done now. And I love what you said about, you know, making sure all of your partners, everyone, you know, with the trade appraisals and chat leads and everything else, you want to make sure that everyone has their events firing to make sure you're collecting all that data and you don't have any blind spots with that data. Any sort of closing thoughts, any sort of things that to have dealers make sure they look out for or anything else? I know you said about connecting with Google Ads. Is any other particular insights you'd like to share to close?
Sure. I would, in today's climate, you know, with a shortage of new cars, make sure you're not still overspending around new cars and really shift some of those advertising budgets into used, whether that's with third parties or whether that's with the new vehicle listing ads, the vehicle ads. Just be smart about it. It's a time when a lot of people are just pivoting, moving more dollar toward fixed ops or used cars versus new. So probably a no-brainer for most dealers.
Great. Well, you heard it here first, folks. GA4, make sure you're making the change now and watch out with that budget allocations in your paid search. George Nenni, as always, a pleasure to have you on. Thank you so much for telling us what's going on in auto.
Sounds great.
It's time for another KPI Cafe. I'm glad to be back, and I'm glad to have a new first-time guest with me here. Been trying to make it happen for a while now, and now we got it. Now we nailed it. Colby Joyner of Connect.ai. Colby, welcome to the KPI Cafe.
Man, I am incredibly excited. I know it's been a while. We first talked about it way back in the Digital Dealer, and probably one of the best conversations I've had in a long time was with you. So I've been super stoked to get this situated.
Fantastic. And there have been some changes in your professional life as well, even since then too. And and it seems like you're happy with the decisions made. And so, you know, that's actually kind of a good pivot right there. A good segue. What's your origin story? How'd you get in automotive retail and how'd you get to where you're at today?
Well, automotive retail was kind of a I kind of fell into it. I sold cars briefly when I was super young, like just barely old enough to sell cars, and then got out of it very quickly because I realized at that age and that maturity level, I was not good at selling cars. So stopped doing that, went to the military, did multiple different jobs after the military, decided I needed to find a way to make some really good money. So I decided to sell cars again because my parents always said like, hey, you'd be a good lawyer, which I didn't go to school to be a lawyer. So I needed to figure out something that can make lawyer type money and use my gift of gab to be able to make that money. So jumped right back into car sales, started selling cars, and quickly moved up and went into, you know, being an internet director and marketing director and platform director most recently with the previous group I was at. And then, you know, I was fortunate enough to find my place here with Connect. It's been awesome.
Wonderful. You joined the dark side, the vendor side of things.
Oh, yeah.
but that's great. Great history. Thank you for your service, by the way. And, you know, let's kind of dive into the purpose of today. And I think it's an important conversation because we're hearing more and more of it. You know, even major platforms like Facebook and Google talking about machine learning, AI. And I've actually been reading recently, it's called the AI Marketing Canvas. It's talking about networks and nodes and defines AI and machine learning. It talks about five stages of AI and machine learning in marketing, including foundation, experimentation, expansion. You know, it's incredibly complex and nuanced. It definitely is kind of a buzzword. A lot of folks are using it, but now you have a specific perspective and how it can be leveraged for the customer journey. So let's start there. Right. Let's start with that 10,000 foot perspective. How is AI integrated in the customer journey in automotive retail?
I mean, right now, I'll be honest, I don't think it's very well done because it's so new, right? It's new to automotive. AI in general, obviously, you have major companies that use AI all the time. And I've mentioned this on several different places that I've spoken and kind of in conversation. Obviously, automotive is a little bit antiquated when it comes to technology. So AI's introduction into automotive is very basic, right? It's very bot driven, where the consumer understands that it's a bot and they kind of handle it as if it's a bot. But obviously, as we're going and as we're building the technology up and as we're enhancing and being able to pull in from other industries and their technology and using machine learning and, you know, having NLP, that natural language, you know, part of the AI, moving forward, I wholeheartedly believe, and I know that's where my company's going, I know that's where other companies are going, is to include this into the customer journey, where the customer doesn't understand necessarily that it's a AI, and it's not our intent to fool anybody. We're not trying to sit there and, you know, laugh in the background and be like, haha, they don't know that it's a computer talking to them. It's in order to make sure that the journey is comfortable and easy and smooth for them, right? One of the biggest issues that we have in automotive in general is follow-up. There's so many companies out there that help out with follow-up or lead tracking or, you know, looking at the analytics of how quickly are you responding to items. AI is able to jump in there initially, have some of this entry-level 10,000 foot view conversations with the customer to kind of gauge where we should place them in their journey with where our process is. And I think it allows that to be incredibly smooth and to make their journey a lot more comfortable in the end, in the long run. Because I wholeheartedly believe I don't ever see or ever intend, whether it's with Connect or ever see outside of Connect, AI taking over the sales process or the purchasing process or the journey. It's meant to be an enhancement. It's meant to make sure that we can get everything filtered down in the right place. So from a salesperson's point of view or somebody inside the dealership, they're not bogged down by needless, unnecessary tasks and follow up and, hey, you can't take an up until you get your 25 calls done and you got to send your emails out. Like, a lot of this stuff can be automated. And a lot of this stuff can be handled with AI. And so then you can be the receiver of additional information outside what the lead gave you. And now you can be better equipped to handle that customer moving forward. So that's where I see AI. I see AI being that entry, the beginning part of the communication, right? As soon as we start talking, the AI is getting involved with the customer, and it's smooth.
Wonderful. I love that. And I like the idea of, you know, talking about this being a tool for people to use to get rid of the busy work, right? To focus on the fundamentals of what their role and responsibilities are. And I often, you know, relate that to things like Performance Max campaigns and the automations there, and a lot of things that Google are doing, so that way your paid search folks can focus on the optimizations and analyzing the data, and they're not busy doing all, you know, checking all those boxes that, as you said, like, you know, an automated process could handle. I like the candor that you had there, you know, about, you know, a lot of it is bot driven. I do want to go back up on one point, because naturally I'm the novice here in this conversation. Yeah. So you talked about, you know, you don't want it to seem like a bot, but you also don't want to fool people, right? You want it to just make it a better experience. So what's the balance there? What's the balance between not making it feel like a bot, but not also, you know, sort of pulling the wool over someone's eyes? What's the balance there? Is there a balance?
Yes, there is. And I think that, first of all, like with us, and I'm using us specifically, and this is not towards anybody in general, this is just our mentality on it. With us, like, we don't name and we don't place a name to the conversation. So I'm not going to introduce the AI itself is not going to introduce itself as, hey, you know, so it wouldn't say, hey, Dane, this is Colby at ABC Motors. It would just say, hey, Dane, this is ABC Motors. Right. So it's not an apparent, hey, we're trying to be somebody when we're really not a living human being. It's just starting the conversation. And I think subconsciously, in reality, subconsciously, the consumer doesn't understand that. Like, they're not going to pick up, wait, they didn't give me the name, right? They're just going to say, okay, this was the initial question. They're not listening to the first part. They're really getting to the gist of the question, especially via text. Text is so quick and so short that it's really question driven. It's itemized, right? So there is that balance where we can have a very engaging conversational nature. It can be almost informal, where it's just like, hey, how's it going? You know, or can I give you a call later? Can I shoot you a call later? You know, something very simple where it's engaging. You understand that from a natural language, where if you're texting with a friend, or if you're texting with whatever, it seems normal. It seems comfortable, but we're not naming it and putting an identity to it. We're really just putting an identity to the store, saying the store is communicating now with the customer, and really just in efforts to grab additional information to leverage the salesperson or internet manager or BDC rep, allow them to have more data to be able to execute on that data better. Obviously it helps with the journey. It helps to be able to close the customer easier, but the customer is already inquiring. So their intention is to buy a car, right? Or at least there's some sort of intention to buy a car because they've inquired through your website or third party or whatever. So now it's allowing us to help that dealership out and give them more data, more information, so that they can provide the customer with the correct answers to the questions. So there's not the frustration level of, you're not listening to me, or I don't know if the car's available, or I don't know if I can get financed, which, by the way, we're not answering any of those questions because an AI doesn't know whether or not the vehicle's available. And even though people would be like, well, yeah, you look at your inventory feed. Well, show me a store that is 100% accurate in an inventory feed. It's just, and I'm not trying to dog anybody, but it doesn't happen.
Yeah.
Like, there's going to be those one or two off cars at the best case scenario that are showing on the feed because they weren't pulled off the DMS and something's wrong. And now if the AI says, oh yeah, it's available, how soon can you come in? Then we lie to the customer. Then we're sugarcoating the whole thing. So from the AI's perspective on our side, we're not going to jump in and really answer questions that could put the dealership in an awkward position. All we're going to do is make sure that the customer is getting the answers that they are looking for, and to leverage them to push them into either calling, scheduling a phone call, visiting the store, moving them further down the funnel where they're enticed by the additional measures of communication.
I really appreciate that clarity. You know, I appreciate the realization of the, sort of the limitation of the AI, and it's not even necessarily the AI or AI company's fault. It's just the fault. Just the natural inherent things that happen, like you said, that the inventory not being removed from the DMS. So I appreciate that you're realistic in what AI can do. You know, and I asked that question initially, you know, about what is that balance? Because naturally with, you know, dealers are unfairly maligned as being, you know, there's that stigma and, you know, we want to be, we want to continue to do better for the customer experience. So I really appreciate that diving down that little bit of a rabbit hole. Now, you talked about getting to the gist. So let's get to the gist here. What does AI engagement with customers look like? You know, you talked about texting and stuff. You gave us a little there. Let's dive a little bit deeper into it. What do AI engagements look like with customers in their journey towards a path to purchase?
Well, you know, really in any process, in any sales process, whether you're on the phone or in person, you're asking qualifying questions and not qualifying whether they can or cannot buy the car or whether we should or should not sell them a car. But qualifying is to trying to figure out like, what car should we put them on? And, you know, where are they leaning and making sure that the customer, because even though you have, you definitely have a subset of customers that are very well versed, they've done their hours and hours of research. They've watched 800 YouTube videos. They've bought, you know, 30 cars in the last 30 years. But then you have a lot of customers that they know they want an SUV and that one looks pretty, right? And so, and they need a car. So they're coming in there. Well, it may not, it may look pretty for them, but it may not functionally work for them. There's a need versus want kind of situation. Yeah. So being able to have that AI go in there and have the engagement conversation to ask those kind of questions, you know, like, hey, you know, tell me how many kids you have, you know, or what is the intention of this? Is it for business or for pleasure? Or, you know, do you have another vehicle that you're looking to trade in? Trying to show them that there's, you know, opportunities in the store for us to give them, you know, a good trade value. Just moving them down that funnel and creating that conversation, because in a traditional lead form on any website, it's relatively simple. First name, last name, cell phone, email, maybe a comment section where they're going to toss in, you know, toss in a objection. Like, if you can give me the $500 off, I'll buy the car now, right? They're going to toss in, or, hey, does this car have, you know, the bucket or the bench seat in the second row? But we all know that a customer doesn't have just one question. Hell, I don't have one question when it comes to buying a car. So I'm not making a negative assumption on the customer. I'm making a factual assumption, right? So we ask additional questions to make sure the customer is very well aware where the dealership may be pushing them to give the customer the good experience. And so when they leave happy. They're not going to be, you know, a month or 2 months down the road saying, man, I wish I wouldn't have gotten that coupe. I needed a sedan, you know, because I'm pregnant and we're going to have a baby next month. But really the car looked really good at that point. So some of these fact finding questions that are relatively simple and doesn't take a lot of intelligence to ask, we're going to ask those and make sure that we push them down the funnel. But at the same time, the whole intention of that engagement is for engagement. The long, you know, the more that a customer will speak with you, whether it's via text, phone call, or in person, you know that you have longer time with that customer. You can push them further down, or you can lead them, guide them further down that funnel. So the more engagement that we can get via the AI on text, we know that when it comes time to for us to say, hey, I think it's a good time for us to hop on a phone call. Are you free in 5 minutes? They're going to be like, yeah, give me a call. Or, hey, I have some additional questions. It's probably easier to talk on the phone. I'll give you a call right now. They're going to say yes, more likely after 4 or 5 valid questions when it comes to their journey versus, yeah, you know, hey, Dane, this is, you know, ABC Motors. Can I call you right now? Be like, no, I'm not going to respond to that. I'm just going to move on. So yeah. it that's the difference between the type of questions that we're asking. And really the questions are just led for engagement, just to get the customer kind of hooked, I guess you would say, and not in a bad way, but just allowing them to feel comfortable communicating, because that's where I think a lot of customers don't feel comfortable communicating. But unfortunately, that's one of the only ways that you can buy a car.
Yeah.
Like, you can text them, you can submit a lead, you can call the dealership, or you can go. They're not going to call because they don't necessarily want to speak to somebody where they have to sit there and explain it. They don't want to just show up at the dealership because you got the salespeople out on the point waiting for them to attack them. So the easiest way is to submit an internet inquiry. Well, if we engage with them in a proper way, make them feel comfortable, bringing the wall down a little bit. Now, when we introduce the phone call or a visit, it's a lot easier. And it's not to, you know, snare them into it. It's just to make them feel comfortable with something that they already intended on doing.
Well, everyone, I know I learned plenty about AI during this first half of the conversation. Like I said, trying to keep these episodes like, you know, 20 to 30 minutes, right? A commute into work, you know, a lunch break. You know, I feel like if they're too long, you know, I don't know. I just feel like trying to keep them a little more brief for you. So I hope you appreciate that. I hope you'll join us tomorrow for part two of the conversation with Colby. We'll forego the what's going on in auto since we just did one here today and keep that next one tomorrow a little more brief as well. So again, tomorrow, part two of the conversation about AI with Colby Joyner of Connect.ai. And I'll tell you what, I hope that you'll join us tomorrow. All right, talk to you then.